This is an AMI podcast.
Hello, you're listening to AMI Audio. I'm Jacob Szymanski here at the Accessible Sports Expo here in Niverville, Manitoba. And I would describe to you what's happening here, but I think I have the perfect person to do that for me. The organizer that works for Accessible Sports Connection Manitoba, Kirby Côté, is with me. Kirby, how's it going?
Hi, hello friends.
Right. What's your quick, the most concise way you can describe what's going on here in Niverville?
This is a choose-your-own-adventure expo where people with disabilities, maybe the active aging community, anyone who might need adapted sport, like adapted equipment or accessible sport or parasport to be physically active, this is where you can come and try your new favorite sport that you didn't even know existed.
Brilliant. And there's a lot going on around us right now, as you could probably hear. Although, how would you describe it? Like, how's it been so far?
I've been running around doing all the organizing. Actually, you know, I think the neatest thing that I've come across is I found out that somebody attended one of these expos a couple years ago, and now they are like working at elite level sport level archery, wheelchair archery. So I thought that was pretty cool. But I think that's not the norm. I think this is really an opportunity for people who just didn't know that this opportunity existed. Like, sir, the disability community is so spread out, and we never really get an opportunity to come together under one roof and do something.
In terms of the different organizations that are present this year, I'm assuming there are a lot of familiar faces for you. Have you seen any new organizations that are first comers?
Ooh, first time here, we have Blind Hockey. You can go visit Scarlett. She is a huge advocate of blind hockey, and it's a sport that, as a visually impaired person myself, I don't know too much about, and so I'd like to actually take a time to chat with her. We also just got two brand new pieces of equipment for alpine, like downhill skiing, and those folks are here. And I think those are I think everyone else I have seen before, but I have seen new equipment from other folks. So we've got Wheelchair Adventures. We have Winnipeg Trails as a new piece of adapted equipment. Yeah, I think everyone just keeps bringing in new items because, you know, disability is not a monolith and everyone has different needs. And so, like I said, the vibe is choose your own adventure, and everyone here tries to do their best to kind of create a space where people can be curious and try something new.
It just shows how many people are willing and prepared to adapt sports for people with disabilities. And there's so much creativity involved in everything that's happening here. It's pretty impressive.
Yeah, I always say, like, the disability community is kind of, like, I grew up in the punk scene, but the DIY punk vibe is, like, built into kind of the disability community as well. And I joke about safety third, but, like, you know, sometimes you try something new and sometimes you get hurt, but you're okay. And when you lose, you don't really lose, you know, in the disability community. We just find out what the next adaptation is, right?
Yeah, and as we're walking around here, there's all sorts of things you can get your hands on. You mentioned lots of equipment. I've seen some fencing swords, some bikes, some blind hockey pucks that look pretty beat up. You guys also have a few live demos that you guys are featuring here. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah, I think we have about 10 sports that are kind of doing a brief little chat about their equipment or about, like, who their sport is for and how you can get more involved. It was something, feedback from the community from last time that they'd like to see, so this is kind of my first time adding that in. I think I'll get better every time I do these events. Like, everything gets a little bit better. I'm really excited about Challenger Baseball. I don't know if anyone's heard of that one. Have you been there yet?
No, we haven't seen that one yet. What's the short version of Challenger Baseball?
Challenger Baseball is like everyone can play all together. It's literally all ages, all abilities. And it always like sounds so overwhelming. Like, how do we create an all ages, all abilities space? Ask Challenger Baseball. They literally have an adaptation for everything. Like, they don't even have to think it up. They've already got it.
Well, that's the epitome of universal design, isn't it?
Yeah.
Brilliant. So how long have you been the manager and coordinator for this event?
I've been a part of Accessible Sport Connection since the beginning. I'm one of the founders.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, fast forward 4 or 5 years, and I didn't necessarily think that I would be, like, wearing the executive director hat, but we're just really We're really a group of individuals who are just really passionate about creating these accessible and inclusive spaces, and we use sport and recreation to do that.
And how long have these conventions been happening?
I think we did, well, we assisted another organization doing a first one back in 2019, and then we've done another small one after that, maybe early 2021. So maybe this is our fourth one in total, and they kind of change in scope, and like some are smaller and some are larger. So fourth.
Okay, awesome. And I hope they keep happening because everyone's in a really good mood here. It's just a really good vibe happening.
Yeah. Yeah, we never know who's going to come to these things. And, you know, we take a chance by making this one a little bit more rural. But this venue is fantastic. Places, towns like Niverville, close by we have Steinbach, has a brand new rec center that's going to be opening up. And I know that their, I think their CFO or I can't remember his name, but he came to visit to check this out, you know. So not only are we gifting something to the disability community, which is at the center of it, we're also teaching our allies, right, our educators, our healthcare providers, other coaches, CEOs of organizations, like what can be done and that they don't have to do it alone either. So, yeah.
I think it's important to mention that this event is also free for anyone who wants
always
to come and visit.
Yeah. I think, yeah, the lowest barrier that I can manage. I also have like ASL interpreters here if that's something that you need. I did do transportation. There was like some transportation from the city. So these are all things that we're always growing every time. And like I said, we just want to let you choose your own adventure and see yourself in this space.
I mean, we can tell that it's a very well-oiled machine over here.
Thank you.
Accessible Sports Connection Manitoba is the organization that organizes this. Can you tell me about the organization?
Yeah, I think, like I said, in a nutshell, we use sport and recreation as a foundation for creating community. And community to us is the disability community, which is not only persons with a disability, it's our friends, our family, our teachers, our healthcare providers. And we just really want to bring everybody together because that's how we can share resources, that's how we share knowledge, that's how we make new friends. You know, it's not quite the norm maybe for a sport organization, but that's really at the heart of what we do is community.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. I'm here with Vic of Low Vision Resources. Sorry, what's the name of the organization again, Vic?
Vision Impaired Resource Center.
Vision Impaired Resource Center. So what are you guys doing here today?
We're here today to promote our active living segment of VIRM. We also do a lot of technical training, travel training, peer support. But here at the Accessible Sport, we're featuring our active living components. We have tandem cycling. We do dragon boat paddling. We also have a learn to curl program. And other things that we also do is we do neighborhood and community walks and tours. Because it's important for us for people to get out and about, be confident in their community, and have that active living component for both their physical and mental health and well-being.
Right. It's such an important part of a healthy lifestyle is to go out and actually do some physical activity once in a while. So I know that curling is very popular in the area in Winnipeg here. So what does that specific component of your programming look like?
We have the Learn to Curl program where we help people who've either lost their vision or have always had a vision impairment to do an in-hack delivery, and if they have some usable vision, teach them how to brush properly and sweep the rocks properly. Mm-hmm. And for people like me who don't have any usable vision, even though I can do an in-hack delivery, I have a designated sweeper that brushes the stones for me.
Oh, okay, but you can still throw the stones, right?
Yes, somebody helps lines me up in the hack, and they also tell me what shot the skip is calling for, whether it's top of the house, T-line weight, or just if they want a left of center, right of center. So the communications is a huge component for our organization when we work with people, because we also help the sighted people work with people with levels of vision impairment so that they can learn how to communicate effectively and efficiently to make the experience better for everybody.
And what about this dragon boat? I've never heard of this. What's a dragon boat?
There's two sizes. There's a 10 person and a 20 person.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So it's we go up and down the Red River here, and sometimes there's some competitions that we enter.
Okay.
So you have 20 people in a boat. At the front of the boat, you have a drummer, which keeps the beat, so we're all in sync with one another.
Mm.
And then there's the steers person at the back of the boat that keeps it in line and will tell us, you know, paddles up, and then count off the strokes so that we're all in sync for during the...
That because that seems like an activity that can be done with people with disabilities and also able-bodied people.
It is, right? Yeah, because all our programs are inclusive programs.
Mm.
So, you know, we encourage people to have their family and friends join us, because we want to show that no matter what your level of vision, we're all part of the community, and we can all contribute to the community in a positive and meaningful way.
So when you're talking to people here today, what kind of conversations are you having?
We're going to talk to them about what we can do, and try to steer away from those conversations of what you can't do because of a disability, because there's a lot of family and friends that are well-meaning that obviously focus on that, because, you know, they think of what their life would be like if they lost their vision or if they had a disability. And we're saying there's thousands of things we can do. Let's focus on those, and we'll worry about the 10 or 12 things we can't do and how find a way to mitigate those challenges.
And it's so important. If you're going through vision loss, one of the things you need to do is find activities that you can comfortably do and that you genuinely enjoy. And that's huge part of rehabilitation, right?
Yeah, and when people are taught how to do an activity properly, it doesn't matter if you're sighted or not, you enjoy it so much more. It's very frustrating when you go out there and nobody's there to teach you and show you how to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Then it can be a negative experience, and we want to avoid that.
And that community aspect is half the battle, right? It's why you go out. Doing these sports alone is not fun.
Right, because we want people to see us as, you know, Vic or Doris out in the community. We want to see, you know, there's the blind guy with the dog, or the, you know, the woman with the cane. We just want us to see us, not the disability.
All right, Vic, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
I'm here with Dustin Reddy of Volt Hockey. Dustin, what is Volt Hockey?
Volt Hockey is essentially, it's a way to play hockey for children that have issues that can't typically skate on skates and have upper body mobility issues. So when they can't typically move around with their arms as much, it's electric wheelchair hockey. So they get a special motorized chair with a joystick on the side. It could be left-handed or right-handed.
Oh my God.
And at the end of that chair, there's a paddle that acts as a hockey stick. The cool thing about these chairs, they can go up to 10 miles per hour. So they get played on a flat surface, and we make a little hockey rink around it, and there's two nets, and they play 3-on-3.
Is there a goalie?
There's no goalies, but one of those three kids gets to be a goalie. So when I'm coaching the kids, when I say that the ball gets into their zone, one of those kids should become a goalie and help protect it from going into the net.
So these chairs, you guys built them yourself?
No, they were donated. They're donated to Variety. Each chair costs about $10,000 each.
Oh my God.
Yes.
So there must be some good motors in there. That's how it gets up to 10 miles an hour.
Yeah, it's all electric. We charge the batteries every time.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. So there's 5 speeds. So all the children start at level 1. Nobody's allowed to go that fast. It's even too fast for me.
So what do you play with, a ball or a puck?
Yeah, we play with a ball. If you know what, like a wiffle ball, one of those plastic balls with the holes in them?
Yes, that's what
we play with.
Okay, that's awesome.
Yeah.
So when the kids are in the chair, can you describe the chair? Like, what do they actually control? You said there's a joystick. Do they control the paddle on the front?
The joystick controls the chair itself.
Okay.
So the paddle on the front is essentially just an arm of the chair that doesn't move.
Oh, okay. So you have to, like, swivel the chair to hit the ball.
Okay. Yeah, so the joystick can move forward, backwards, left, turns the chair, like the front of the chair left. The chair's got 3 wheels. Okay?
Okay, it's like a tricycle.
Right, right. So it's able to turn on a dime. So you could actually turn the stick like it's shooting the ball.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's like bumper car hockey.
Almost, yeah. We try to teach the kids not to run into each other with the chairs, but the paddles have to hit each other because how else are you supposed to be competitive?
Right, they probably clack together all the time.
Yeah.
Awesome. So do kids, like, do you bring this in elementary schools, or like, where, how does your program work? How does somebody, if somebody wants to play this, how do you get involved?
Right now, we're at the Dakota Fieldhouse on Sundays from 4 to 6.
And where is that?
Lead times is on Dakota Street in Dakota City.
Yep. Okay.
And we have, right, if anybody wants to get involved, they can come to the Variety booth here at the convention and come sign up. On April 14th, we have a try-it session. So anybody who wants to get involved can come to that and check out varietymanitoba.com and sign up there.
All right, awesome. Dustin Reddy, thank you so much.
Thank you, Jacob.
I'm here with Sam and Peter from Manitoba Fencing. Sam, Peter, thanks for being with me.
Thanks for having us. And Peter's just a bit off mic here, but Peter, you want to say hi?
Hi, everybody. Thanks for talking to us.
Awesome. So Manitoba Fencing is involved with an adapted form of fencing. Do you want to tell us about it?
Yeah, absolutely. The adapted form of stand-up fencing is wheelchair fencing, and it's a sport in the Paralympic Games. Mm-hmm. And so there's three different types of sword weapons that we use in wheelchair fencing, the saber, the foil, and the épée.
And those are three different categories, right?
Correct. Yeah, they're three different types of events. They all have their different targets that they'll use. You know, saber is a little bit more of a slash type attack, whereas foil is an electrified and target specific button point at the end of it. And then épée is just anywhere in the upper body, as well as also it's got a button point, so it's more of a poke type sword.
Okay, very different strategies for actually doing the attacks.
Absolutely, yes.
So you're talking about wheelchair fencing. There's no elegant way of me asking this. How does one do fencing on a wheelchair?
Just exactly that. We're two people in wheelchairs are positioned about 4 feet apart. And we fence as stand-up fencers do, except we don't get to run away.
So you have one hand on a wheel and one hand on a sword? Or how does that work mechanically?
Basically one hand holding on and one on the sword, because the wheelchairs are stationary.
Ah, okay. Any special adapted rules for this this type of fencing?
The rules for the fencing itself are exactly the same. It's just as we're stationary as opposed to moving back and forth as stand-up fencers do.
Ah, okay. And how did you guys get started?
We kind of dared each other to do it and then decided that we would get things started.
So what are you guys hoping to do here at the Accessible Sports Expo? Do you have demos happening?
We're hoping, we're doing some demos. We're hoping to meet some more folks that are interested in wheelchair fencing and grow our group.
And speaking of your group, do you have a decent crew of people that are involved in this regularly?
We have a small group right now. There's only three of us, but we could grow to as big as 20.
Oh, okay. There's only three of you. And this is a sport at the Paralympics, right? So it seems to be fairly established worldwide. Would you say that?
Oh, very much so. It's a very strong Paralympic sport, actually.
Hmm. In terms of like the skills you need to successfully play wheelchair fencing at a high level, like, what are some things that are especially unique to wheelchair fencing that are different from your traditional fencing?
I would say concentration is important, because it moves very, very quickly. And other than that, the other skills, like the particular techniques and coordination and stuff, build as you participate in the sport. So I guess you have to have the nerve to sit still while somebody swings a sword at you, and the concentration to pay attention to what's going on.
I can add to that.
Of course.
Right, and in terms of the equipment, excluding the three types of swords, what do you need?
So for the equipment, it's all traditional fencing gear, everything from the jackets to being wired up. You get wired up into the scoring system that helps the referee determine who wins the point. Different different swords have different clothing as well. So if you're doing saber, you're wearing a lame, which is sort of a metallicized jacket that goes on top of your jacket, which which creates the target. Foil is similar, in which it's more of a vest cut, so it's just chest is your only target that you're allowed. And then in epee, you're just in your white jacket.
Okay, brilliant. And where do you guys practice this usually?
So we normally practice this out of Sport Manitoba on Monday nights in Winnipeg at about 6:30. And so we practice, that's our home facility. But there's other fencing clubs all over the city if folks want to also get involved as well.
Perfect. And if anybody wants to get involved, how would they reach out and contact you?
The best way to reach out is to reach out to the Manitoba Fencing Association, and they'd be more than happy to get you in contact with us as well.
Awesome. And for people who are at the event right now here in Niverville, I heard you guys have some swords and equipment that people can get their hands on. Is that right?
Absolutely. You can come out, try on all the equipment. We got masks, jackets, all the swords. We can even hook up into the scoring system here. We got it all electrified as well. Anyone can come and give fencing a shot.
Awesome. Sam, Peter, thank you so much.
Thank you.
All right. I'm here with Mélanie Curet. She is, her title is unclear, but she is very heavily involved with Beyond the Perimeter Badminton. Mélanie, thanks for being with us.
Oh, well, thanks to you.
So tell me what you guys are looking to do here.
So Beyond the Perimeter Badminton, maybe I'll talk a bit about what we are. So essentially, Beyond the Perimeter Badminton is a volunteer-led, not-for-profit grassroots organization. So we started with one club, and then we cohorted them. And now we run a few different community clubs as well. So open to the community, primarily in southern Manitoba, and open to folks of all ages, all levels of abilities, etc. So we're here today to talk about para badminton and sort of what the different options are for para, because it is a sport that's growing, both in the province, nationally, internationally, etc.
Awesome. And you're here at the Accessible Sports Expo, so that means that you're offering some sort of accessible, adapted version of badminton. To who are you adapting? To what disabilities are you adapting the sport?
Yeah, so para badminton is primarily accessible to folks with mobility issues. So it doesn't, it's not a sport that has essentially adapted tools, but it's more so that the game, the rules of the game, the dimensions of the court, for example, are adapted to the folks that are playing depending on level of ability.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you give me an example? Like, what are the different types of, like, what disabilities are is this accessible to?
Yeah, absolutely. So badminton has a long way to go in terms of visual impairments. So that's not something that has been worked on extensively. So that's not really something that we're adapted to, unfortunately. But for anybody with essentially mobility issues who might have difficulty getting around the court, those are more the para athletes that we cater to. So there are six different categories.
Okay.
That are sort of divided into three main ones, I guess. So there is wheelchair badminton, which is definitely available. There is also standing. So you would have standing lower categories, which are for athletes that maybe have limited mobility in the lower part of the body. Standing upper would be same idea, but with mobility issues in the upper body. And then there are also short stature categories.
Okay, standing. Does that mean that there's limited movement? Like the court is smaller, so
in some cases, yes. So depending on the level of mobility in the athletes, once they've gone through the assessment process, and it's been determined if it's been determined if they would be like the first or second category of standing lower or standing upper. For some of them, if the mobility is more severely impaired, then for a category like singles, you would have the court essentially shrunk. You would be playing more or less on a half court. In doubles, you would still play full court, but whether you're playing on a full or half court more or less depends on the ability of those folks, depending on where they've been assessed.
Interesting. Okay, because we've been talking to lots of people. If there's a theme that's been coming through, is that it's all about adapting and being very, very creative, and every disability is different.
Absolutely.
So there's six different categories for this. That's a perfect example of that.
Yeah.
flexibility and adapting sport. Do you have any success stories, any particularly memorable participants that especially enjoyed your program?
100%. So not that have worked specifically with us. We're a fairly new club, but actually Manitoba is very much has a success story. So para badminton was added to the Paralympic Games in Tokyo. So Tokyo was the first time that para badminton was featured, and Canada was lucky enough to send one single athlete to Tokyo for the Paralympic badminton event, and that athlete is Olivia Meyer, and she is from Manitoba. So born and raised in Manitoba, and she learned to play here, she trained here, and she works very closely with Elliot Beals, who runs the program out of the Winnipeg Winter Club, and he's actually the assistant national para coach. So Manitoba very much has a history in para badminton, which is awesome, and we're hoping to, you know, have more athletes come out and have that accessible space for them so that they come out and they can learn about the game and they can practice regardless of the age. And that's one thing that I probably should note is para badminton does not have age categories. There's no such thing as a junior or sort of adult event. It's para badminton specifically is all ages.
Well, congratulations on having one of your members go to the Paralympics. That's that speaks a lot about your program.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely huge for Manitoba. So we can't claim her here at Beyond the Perimeter, but we are definitely very, very proud of her.
Manitoba represents.
Absolutely, absolutely. Did a great job. Mm-hmm.
And for people who are looking to get involved, how would they go about connecting with you guys?
So if they want to connect with us, they can definitely head to our website, which is beyondtheperimeterbadminton.ca. So we do have a few different clubs, depending on what they're looking for. We can work with essentially any para badminton athlete or enthusiast who wants to try it out. And so we have options more in the southern part of the province. And then if folks are looking in other areas, they could certainly reach out and we can try and pair them up with a program or a facility that would be able to accommodate them and welcome them.
And where are those locations more specifically?
So that's very club dependent. So and again, it depends on the category that the folks are looking for. So as an example, wheelchair badminton typically requires hardwood floors or at least a hard enough surface to play on, and not all clubs have access to that in their gyms. So it would just it would primarily depend on the category. There are certainly a few in Winnipeg that would be able to accommodate. And then when it comes to the outside of the city or rural Manitoba, then it would be a little bit more club dependent. We'd have to reach out to them directly and ask the question.
In terms of costs, how much can somebody expect to have to pay to get involved?
Badminton is actually can be very, very low cost to get into. So part of what we do is we want to make the sport as accessible as we can. And that includes both, you know, for all demographics. Badminton can obviously, if you're pursuing it at a very high level, it is very costly. You're playing internationally, you're putting up funds for tournaments, for travel, et cetera, et cetera. But in terms of getting started, a club like ours, we are trying to design it so that it is very, you know, wallet friendly. You know, we have rackets that people can use until they get their own so that they can try it out. They can see if they're interested. And when we run camps, when we run mini camps, we try and keep those as low cost as, like, you know, the most amount of value for the buck as they can. So if you want an actual like dollar amount, so for example, we just ran a camp and it was a 2-day camp. We ran it for spring break and we offered a lot of discounts, and athletes for the 2 days were paying somewhere between $35 to $50 for those two full days.
Yeah.
Exactly. So it's, you can certainly invest more money if you want. But for a club like ours that is community based, it's not profit. Most folks are putting money down. They're spending, you know, $40, $50 on a membership, and that gets them access to every single one of our open sessions that are either weekly or bi-weekly, depending on the community that they're playing in. And they can come as many times as they want in like a 4 or 5 month, you know, series. So it's really, really a good option for families, and we have a lot of families that play, that'll come out, they'll play with their kids. So it's a great option for that.
Well, something that people often forget is that prohibitively expensive programs is often a common form of an accessibility barrier. So it's
absolutely
really good that you're making these initiatives to make it more affordable. For you personally, how did you get involved in this?
Oh my goodness. So my father coached He started, so we started a program not far from here in Saint-Pierre-Joly, which is a small town just south of Winnipeg in southeastern Manitoba. So my father coached, and he started that program when I was about 10 years old. And so he would bring me along, and I would have to demo drills for older kids, and that's how I learned to play. And because he had always coached so many sports, that seemed a very natural thing for me to do. So as soon as I turned 15, I started coaching some of the younger athletes, and I've really never quit. So this is my 24th season coaching.
Okay.
And and the club in St. Pierre has been running for about 20 years, and then Beyond the Perimeter we founded about 3 years ago. And so now we're slowly expanding to different communities. And that was a big part of it, is we really saw a need, especially after the pandemic. So the pandemic had a really massive effect on grassroots programs in the province. Yeah, because they rely so much on community gyms, on school gyms, which weren't being rented because of, you know, public health concerns. So this was a way for us to answer that and work collaboratively with other communities, with schools, to offer programming, offer programs for those school athletes in any school that gives us access to their gym. And we really have tried to make it as win-win as possible. So it's been a bit of a passion project for all of us. So like I said, it's volunteer-led, and you mentioned my title earlier. It's, you know, co-founder slash lead administrator slash coach, and it's a little bit...
It's a lot of parts.
A lot of us do a little bit of everything. We wear many hats to keep it running, but we're growing, and we get so much help from junior coaches, and we really work a lot on coach development and bringing people into the sport and keeping them into the sport, because there aren't many sports that, you know, we've run tournaments with senior, junior categories, and we've seen adults playing with seven-year-olds and doubles, and there aren't a lot of sports where you can do that. So we very much enjoy being able to offer that sort of thing and watching it go from there.
Amazing. Thank you so much, Melanie.
No, thanks to you.
That was Melanie Carrette of Beyond the Perimeter Badminton.
Hi, you're listening to AMI Audio. I'm Jacob Szymanski here at the Accessible Sports Expo in Niverville, Manitoba. Chris Delinsky, the Executive Director of Prairie Strides, is with me. Chris, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
What is Prairie Strides business?
Prairie Strides is an adaptive riding program for children with disabilities.
Oh, that's awesome. Okay, so how does that work mechanically, and what kind of disabilities are you guys adapting for?
We do all kinds of disabilities, so ADHD, cerebral palsy, just to name a couple of them. So it just depends on their ability and how well they can adapt. Sometimes the horses, basically we get them on the horses and use the horses as, it's a recreational activity is what we're offering, but it has therapeutic side benefits to it, where it helps the kids stretch and feel motion. Anybody who might be wheelchair bound might feel the sensation of walking again.
So does that involve adapted saddles, and like what kind of equipment do you guys use to
sometimes it does involve adaptive saddles or different supports. Each of our riders actually have a team of three volunteers with them. One to lead the horse, and then they have a support on either side of them, again depending on what the rider needs. Sometimes they don't need the sidewalkers to walk beside them, just the leader in front.
Okay, so you're flexible for all sorts of different disabilities and whatever
Absolutely.
The people need, right? It's customizable.
Yes.
Do the participants get to control the horses? How much control
sometimes,
do you get on the
horseback? Sometimes
horseback?
They do. We encourage them, depending, again, on what their abilities are. But we do have reins on the horses, and in some cases, bridles, where they can actually steer their own horse as well.
Oh, okay, so it's not always. Oh, okay, I see. Where do you guys do this?
We run out of a facility in Oak Bluff, Manitoba, called West Wind Stables.
Are the horses adapted to this? Because this is not your typical type of riding. Where do you get your horses?
Well, the facility provides the horses, and the horses are specially trained, so we test them out to make sure that they are going to be suitable for the different riders, or we might even, we match the horse and the rider together to the best of the ability, because the horses do move differently. So the instructors actually ride the horses ahead of time to see what the horse feels like and what kind of riders we can put them on, and we match them up based on that.
Oh, okay. So what kind of characteristics do you look for in your horses? For example, someone who's wheelchair bound?
very quiet, somebody, a horse that might be able to adapt a little bit of movement, or a rider that might not be fully centered themselves. But again, if the horse moves around, they might ask the whole rider to center themselves because they'll compensate for them a little bit. So,
okay, brilliant. And what's your role in all of this business?
I oversee everything.
Okay.
So
big
I
manager.
Coordinate the volunteers. Yeah.
Gotcha. Big job. Do you have any success stories from all of this? Like any participants that really stuck with you?
Well, one of our graduating riders from a few years ago actually has graduated from the program and is now riding independent in a more regular riding program.
Oh, okay. And what are you looking to do here today at the Accessible Sports Expo?
Just expose our sport because it's very unique to the industry, I guess.
You didn't gallop on a horse here, did you?
No. It would be a long drive. Long ride.
Long ride. It was a long ride to get here. All right, perfect. Chris, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
I'm here with Avery Lindgren, a participant in the Swim Academy. Avery, can you let me know how you first heard about the program?
So I used to do swim lessons at Bonnie Vitale, and the coach of Parastorm Swim Club, Karen Williams, would coach the team on the same nights that I did swim lessons. So she would come over and give the lifeguards and instructors tips on how to teach me and some things that might work better since I have dwarfism. There's different ways that things my body moves, and so she just gave adaptations. And then when I finished lessons, I eventually moved into the swim club. And then our swim club developed a swim academy to teach kids with disabilities how to swim, since lots of us went through the Red Cross and had some issues with it. We figured we'd try teaching them and see if it was easier.
So how does the Parastorm Swim Academy differ from what you saw at the Red Cross?
So the Swim Academy is run strictly out of our club. It's out of still Bonnie Vitale. It's all one-on-one lessons, and it's run by all of our athletes, with our coaches along the wall as well, helping us. All of the programs are adapted to each kid. So we have one main program, and then we work individually with them and adapt it to their own physical ability.
Huh. So how, when you go to participate, like how does your average day over there look for you?
So I'm at the pool most like Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday training. So that's okay. When our team, our athletes swim and train. And then on Fridays, we run our academy. It's 3 sessions. We're hoping to get more pool space if we could. But yeah, it's one-on-one. Each one runs about 45 minutes. And yeah.
So how is the sport, how do they accommodate it for you specifically?
There's our coach, as I mentioned, Karen Williams, has been doing this for a long time, and she's seen numerous of disabilities. And in the pool, we all have the same, I guess, workout or schedule, whatever.
Okay.
Each one of us, we adapt it specifically on our own disability and what we can and cannot do. The amount of reps we do is also based on our ability, and it's mainly all through our coach just figuring it out as we go.
And what kind of disabilities have you seen come through?
Well, there's been lots. We've had lots of CP, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome, autism, dystonia, me with dwarfism. There's been many, many disabilities. I can't think of them all, but...
And how did you first hear about the program?
I first heard about it. They were training at the same time that I was doing swim lessons. And then we kind of got talking with the coach, and then we met her, knew her for a little while, and then eventually joined the team.
I love that story. It seems like it started very organically.
Yeah.
Now, you said you practice 3 times a week, like minimum. That seems like a lot. Is that some sort of training?
Yes. So, yeah, we practice at the pool 3 days a week. Each of them is 2 hours. That's including with some activation and mobility at the end. And then our competitive team is in the gym twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. So
okay, because swimming is fantastic exercise.
So yes.
3 times a week, 2 hours a day. You must be in pretty good shape.
Yes, yeah.
So how do they specifically adapt competitive swimming for people with disabilities?
So competitive swimming is, so you're classified on a scale, I think it's out of 14, 1 to 14, and then so 1 being the slower, more physically impaired, and then as you go up, it's kind of less impairment, more mobility, and then I think 14 and 13 are intellectual, and also I think 13 is visual. So you go through a whole classification process, and you're given your number. So, like, I'm a 6. And when you touch, so when you're in a race, when you touch on the wall, it doesn't necessarily mean that you are first in that race. The classification, so everyone has their own class. It gets put into a system based on their class and what time they touched at. I'm not sure how the system, like the computer system works, and then it kind of spits out who touched first or second. So me being a 6, I could touch before somebody who is lower than me as like a 3, but they can still win the race, I guess.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
Yes.
It kind of puts everyone on even field, right?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Brilliant. Brilliant. I'll ask one more question. If somebody wants to get involved in this, how do they reach out?
We have our website, www.parastormswimclub.ca.
Avery, thank you so much.
Yes, thank you.
I'm here with Scarlett Dorn of Blind Hockey Canada. Scarlett, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So what exactly are you looking to do here at the Accessible Sports Expo?
We want to bring awareness to the sport of blind hockey here in the province of Manitoba, specifically Winnipeg at the moment, to try and grow the sport and build a program here.
For people who aren't aware of blind hockey, which I think is a lot of people, what's the short version of how this sport is adapted for blind and low vision players?
Blind hockey is adapted in the form of using a puck that is 3 times the size of a traditional hockey puck. It is metal and has ball bearings in it, so it rattles as it goes along the ice, making it able to be tracked by people without sight. Mm. We also play with a pass whistle rule, meaning you have to make a pass going into the offensive end before you shoot on net, and a whistle will be blown, signaling to the goalie that a shot is coming on net.
Right, so it's not always the same player coming in on a breakaway.
Correct.
And I understand that it's a mix of low vision and totally blind players. How is that arranged usually?
Well, there is a range, so you have your B1s, which are completely blind, and they play goalie. And B2s and B3s are forwards in defense, and there's a point system that allows you to calculate who's on the ice at what time.
Oh, how does the point system work? I'm curious.
So you have to have a certain amount of points, and so B3s and B2s are different amounts, and collectively you make the total of points.
Oh, does that mean one team can have more players on the ice than the other?
No.
Okay. So how are the points tallied up, though?
I'm not exactly sure.
Oh, okay.
Off the top of my head.
You mentioned the puck. Do you happen to have one with you?
Yes, I do.
You do? Can you rattle it? We'd love to hear it. Get that close to the microphone. Is that heavy? Can I hold it?
Yeah.
It's about the same weight as a hockey puck. It's just about, it's like the size of maybe a small dinner plate, but it's pretty thick too. So how did you personally get started with blind hockey?
I found blind hockey in 2015 when it came and did a try-it session here. I unfortunately did not get to attend, but the news media surrounding it, my mom found out, and I got to go try a summer development camp.
Okay.
And that is how I fell in love with the sport.
Right, it seems to be pretty well developed at this point. It makes sense given that it's in Canada. It would be a very popular sport. I think the question most people would have is how much contact is there, or unintentional contact?
There is no intended contact, right. So there's no hitting, but there is incidental contact.
Yeah, I can imagine. You have to be pretty brave to play, but I know for other adapted sports for blind people, like, they're pretty good at figuring out their spatial awareness and communicating, and there's probably less contact than you would imagine, right?
At times.
At times. It depends how good the players are, eh?
It depends how well your teammates communicate.
Yeah, right. And you guys are always looking for new participants?
Yeah.
Of all ages?
Of all ages.
And of all skill levels?
Precisely.
I'm assuming this is popular with players who used to play hockey and lost their vision later on?
Yeah, but there are some with their children and youth programming that are starting out not having vision. Mm. So.
And I guess a big part of that is learning how to skate, right?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Scarlett, thank you so much.
Thank you.
I'm here with Kane Hashimoto, and he's here on behalf of Underground Adaptive. Kane, thanks for being with us.
Hey, nice to be here.
Awesome. So tell me what you're doing here.
I make higher-end full suspension trikes for people of all needs. I guess I first one I made was, other than for my wife, was for a C5/6 quadriplegic.
Okay.
And that's his right there. It has a handbrake. And it's full suspension, fully customized to his needs, to his lengths and his proportions, his needs. And started with that. And then we have a couple other people that have seen them and said, well, I want one. And how do I get one? It's like, well, let's make you one. And so I started out by making parts by hand with a hacksaw and a drill. And then after I prove the parts, I do a CNC file, and I actually just found a suitable person to make the files without being an edgelord and wanting to charge so much money, because just trying to get anything machined here is just, like, you can't do it. It's just price prohibitive, right? Mm-hmm. And so I found a good person, and I got this suspension knuckle right here. Mm-hmm. This knuckle is the same one for Jared's right here, and so...
And could you describe it for us? Like, what is this part?
It's a suspension knuckle. So it's a steering knuckle for a trike. You have to have a way to hold your brakes and your wheel to the trike.
Oh, okay, of course,
and
yeah.
Most times it's a rigid system because it's very complicated to put a whole suspension system with an air shock, mm-hmm. and pivot points and such and so forth into a whole system. But I designed one for him by hand. I proved it. Because I go to Whistler, I do downhill on my trikes. I've gotten almost 40,000 kilometers combined total testing on my trike. So I test everything before I let anyone else try it.
Of course, yeah.
And so I've tested it, and it was really crude, with plastic bushings rather than this thing here, which has sealed bearings and everything you'd ever want with left and right brake mounts built into the one-piece carrier system. So that's just one of the pieces that I'm getting custom built. I'm also getting a whole trike, two whole trikes built right now as we speak that should have been here, but because of shipping delays, it won't be here till Tuesday, so I couldn't show anyone. So, but whatever, you know.
So you build these yourself. Like, what's your background?
I'm a Grateful Dead head. I'm a Deadhead Class 1. So I like bikes. And I love my wife, and I started with building her a trike. Well, yeah, I built a trailer for her to pull around, and then my son came along, and so we had a trailer for him. And then we had another trailer for her wheelchair, so we had three trailers, and mm-hmm. then my son got bigger, I got older, and I said, no, I can't do this anymore, so let's try hand cycle. So I built her a hand cycle, and it was fine for the feast. Couple of blocks, and then you realize how hard hand cycling is.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say, because our arms are way less strong than our legs, right?
It yeah, must be hell and, of a workout. Well, you get it if you use it, right? Like, you can gain it, but if you're just starting out, it's really hard, and get hit incline and bam.
Right, exactly.
And so I added an electric motor to hers, and then I just thought, well, that was too easy. And also, at one point when we were at Whistler, we met Christian Bragg from Bowhead. And I automatically loved the thing that he built because that's exactly sort of what I had in my mind, what I wanted to build in. But when I explained things to my wife, she goes, what the hell are you talking about? And so I started to stop talking about what, trying to describe what I want to do and just make it and show people, because then they go, I still don't understand, right? And until you actually show the movie, they go, oh, okay.
Well, that's one of the beautiful things of being here. You get to show people firsthand. You have a couple. Do you have a couple models here for people to see?
Yeah, we have two models here. We have one that's for Jared. It has a body harness and brake, hand brake system, because he can't grip a hand lever. So I built him a little roller cam thing, so he just has to flick his wrist just as much as he needs. He can lock it up if he needs, or he can modulate it so he can actually steer and do stuff.
Oh, brilliant.
So yeah, that's his system. I actually have 7 different trikes. I don't have a vehicle to bring them all here.
Okay.
So the one that I brought here isn't necessarily for a handicapped person, but there is an aspect that I thought was sort of missed, was a rehab. So let's say you get injured,
right?
Or let's say you get a case of the hemorrhoids and you can't sit down. You know, there's lots of reasons why you can't sit down, but you can still stand up and still do things. Or if you need to build your core and your balance. And so this is why I built this trike here, which is the half end of a Da Vinci Wilson downhill bike with my front end. And this one won't suit most people in the handicap realm, but not every single bike works for every single person, and there are people who can recover and, you know, from their injuries, and, you know, so I just figured, why not? I was bored, and that's how a lot of it happens, is I just sit there and think, oh, that would be cool, and then I have to make it, and then when I make it, it's like, well, okay, that's cool, well, I can add to that, and next thing you know, I have like 7 different trikes and a couple different suspension types, and
right, and suddenly you're becoming somewhat of an expert on this.
Well, sort of, yeah, and not only that, like I taught myself how to anodize a couple months ago. I thought, oh, you know what, I really like anodized colors, and I should just learn how to do it, and it was super simple.
And what's anodized?
Anodizing is when you take aluminum and you put it in a tank of acid and you throw electricity through it, and it will actually grow aluminum onto the aluminum, but this aluminum, when it grows, is super porous. And those pores allow the dye to go in and get trapped in there. And so you have to anodize it, and then you color it. And this is just RIT fabric dye.
Oh, okay. I guess. So it's a work of art.
And look, well, I guess for you, but I guess for anyone who can see colors, like, I'm a color guy. I love colors. And I'm all about any color combinations, and I just think black is cool, but all the stuff that I make is just raw silver or, you know, raw aluminum, and I just figured, hey, you know, time for color, and people like it more, and it gives it a little bit more professional, because, you know, the way that I work is like, okay, we'll set you up, we'll get you going, but if it's raw and rough, I'll refine it for you and get back to you, but you can ride. You know what I mean? It's like,
yeah,
the point is to get you out riding, and then we'll get your comfort level fixed. We'll get your speed fixed. We'll get all those other things worked out, and you'll come to me and go, well, I don't like this. I need more support here, or, you know, the shock's too this way. And so a lot of the stuff that I make is super adjustable, like ultra adjustable. Mm-hmm. So you can take a set of tubes and a set of connectors and make almost anything for anybody and any one of their needs. And so,
right, you're very adaptable, right?
Well, that's the whole thing. It's well, that's the whole thing too with adaptive anything, is you, the part sort of has to adapt to you, but in a sense sometimes you have to adapt to it, because there are limitations, right?
Right. So it's a learning curve for the writers as well.
Well, of course, especially like there's more than 2 types, but generally in my realm there's 2 types of people. People who haven't ridden before, which is great for people on trikes, and people who have hurt themselves and can't bike like they used to, and they want to get back and, you know, slay that dragon, hit those big jumps, and it's just they got that need to perform, right? And so
it's just
like, if they can't bike, they'll trike, and if they can't trike, they'll do, you know what I mean? So,
find something else, right?
Right, exactly. If, like, you have a will. Well, for the most part, I can't say 100%, but for the most part, if you have the will, there is a way. It's just a matter of doing it. And if you fail, you fail, and that's what you learn off of. And, you know, but, yeah, the successes have been compounding with these, and my only problem is people want them right away, and it's just like, wow.
It takes time to
build.
It
takes time.
Well, right?
I have zero money. I have zero backers, zero, like, nothing behind me, and I'm a poor old hippie. So, like, it takes time. Like, for me to develop something, it could take years, mm-hmm. but if I had the money, it'd be days. Right, and so like I do it in little spurts, and what I usually end up doing is selling my bike parts that I had from before, you know, and just to cover costs, and you know, and sometimes, you know, as cheap as I try to make these, because like a bowhead is around $25,000, which, don't get me wrong, it's a wonderful machine. It's worth almost every penny of it for the performance wise. It's just that not many people can afford $25,000.
It's very specialized equipment.
And not everyone can ride one of those, because you have to have a certain amount of core, right? Mm-hmm. And so with mine, I try to get people all topped out with like all the top end Fox shocks and Maxxis wheels and Hope hubs and brakes for $10,000, and that would be all topped out, right? And I'm a non-profit. Actually, I'm a lost profit. so like, if it's not a business, it's just sort of like, my thing is like, I'm not looking to take customers away from other people. My thing is, I want to beat the snot of whoever is the king of the hill. That's my pride thing, and like, and it's, you know, I only have a couple trikes. I don't have any riders, you know, so like, you know, to develop a rider program, which I love to do, is something, you know, coming down. You know, everything takes time and money, and for people to know and people to want to, you know, to do that, right?
Of course,
because, you know, people have to know, right? And if you don't know, you don't know, right?
All right, Kane, thanks so much.
Thank you, guys.
All right.
Have a great day.
That was Kane of Underground It's Active. I encourage anyone who's listening to come and take a look at his bikes. We're here at the Niverville Recreational Center.
You can check out my stuff on Facebook at Caden Hashimoto's. If you have to friend me to see all the listing of all my stuff, fine. I'm also on Instagram. I post a lot of my stuff on there. And that's the only way you can get a sort of a hold of me if you have needs. And if you have need, I'll try and help you out.
There you go. Thanks so much.
And that's it for our coverage of the Accessible Sports Expo 2024 happening here in Niverville, Manitoba. I hope you found something that piqued your interest. I'm Jacob Szymanski. Our technical producer was Mark Aflalo. And the manager of AMI Audio is Andy Frank. Also, special thanks to Accessible Sports Connection Manitoba for organizing all of this. That's it. You're listening to AMI Audio. Have a good one.